All right. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Get It. Yep. I hope that you've been having a good time so far. My name is Lucas, and I wanted to start off by showing you a picture. Okay. This was me 8 years ago, 2018, and that was my first time in Get It. Okay. I still remember this experience up until today, and a big reason why I still remember is because of the title, actually. You know, there was something about that title of that Get It that really hit hard for me. The title was, "We Are All Going to Die." Whoa. Now, I don't know why, but it was probably because 20-year-old me was thinking a lot about life and death at the time. Just like many 20-year-olds would, right? And there was something special about that year, you know, that got me to think extra hard about life and death. You know, 2018 was a pretty eventful year for all the wrong reasons. Any of you are fans of Avicii here? Avicii fans in the house? Anyone? Now, Avicii was one of the most successful DJs of the time. Okay, many of you probably would have heard his music before. There's this song, "Wake Me Up." Wake me up when it's all... Y'all know that song? Yeah? He was a multi-award-winning DJ. Okay, he had millions of fans worldwide, billions of streams. At the time, he had an estimated net worth of $50 million. Wow. He was so popular that my Penang relatives who didn't even speak English, okay, they were playing his music during Chinese New Year. That's how popular he was, okay? But at the peak of Avicii's career, at the age of 28, he tragically took his own life while he was on vacation, okay? His family released an open letter shortly after his death saying, "Our beloved Tim was a seeker, a fragile artistic soul searching for answers to existential questions. He really struggled with thoughts about meaning, life, happiness. He could now not go on any longer. He wanted to find peace." And that really got me to think, you know, a guy who was so successful in life, so loved by millions of people around the world, so wealthy, how is it that a guy like that could still be looking for meaning in life? How is it that he could still be looking for fulfillment and peace? Now, there were other significant world events that year. Some of you might remember the 2018 California wildfires. In 2018, at the peak of a severe heat wave in California, wildfires started to spread, okay, and eventually it destroyed entire towns. Okay, these fires lasted for an entire month. It cost $26 billion in property damage. Okay, hundreds of people tragically lost their lives in these wildfires. And 24,000 homes were destroyed. You know, people were saying that it was like looking at their worlds just disappear. It's surreal, you know. I mean, just imagine if this was your house. One day, you're living peacefully, sitting in your home, drinking your morning coffee like you usually do. And then the next day, everything that you've ever known, everything that you built all those years, all just reduced into ashes. You know, suddenly, you have no home, no belongings. Nothing. And it all just happens overnight. Now, there were many more, okay, but those were just some events that coincided with my first time in Get It. And so I was walking in thinking about life. And I was thinking, you know, in the midst of all of these tragic events that happen in our lives, you know, around us as well, where is God in all of it? I was looking for answers. And perhaps in a similar way, there are some of you here in Get It for the first time, and that's the case as well. Because the question that we are asking this evening, "Are you there, God?" That is a question that most, if not all of us, have asked before at one point of our life, at least. Do you agree? We have all had that moment where life feels so heavy, so confusing, that we just wonder, "God, are you even there?" And it doesn't take that much for us to ask this question, right? Sometimes you feel like you're just existing, just like a piece of meat, chasing pleasure or just numb, right? You're in the LRT, you're sitting in your car in the middle of a 1.5 hour jam, or you're awake in the morning, early in the morning for yet another day at work. Oh my gosh, right? Or you're doing your 8th assignment of the semester, and you just wonder, does anyone even care? Does God care? Is God even there? And the thing about this question is that we are definitely not the first people who have asked this question. Okay? It's a fundamentally human question. In fact, it's one of those questions that people have been asking for centuries, thousands of years. You know, a famous 20th century philosopher, his name is Albert Camus, he famously said this, you know, the absurd is born of this confrontation between the human need and the unreasonable silence of the world. Right? We expect answers to the events that happen in this world to understand our meaning in life. But it seems like the universe or God, if he even exists, doesn't answer. And it makes it feel like our lives are just absurd, nonsensical. And Camus was not the only philosopher, he's not the first philosopher, in fact, who have asked this question. Even long before, ancient philosophers have been asking the same question. You know, Epicurus was an ancient Greek philosopher who was born in 341 BC. That's almost 2,400 years ago, guys. And even he was asking this question. If God is able to eliminate the horrible things that happen in this life, in this world, and yet they still continue happening, then where is he? Where is God? If God were there, then my life would have so much more direction, right? I wouldn't need to be groping in the dark, trying to figure out what life really is about. If God were there, then shouldn't he be doing something in this world? Now, I think that we can all agree, right, that life isn't exactly smooth sailing. You see death, you see disasters, you see disease, you see relationships fall apart. Life sometimes lacks meaning and direction. And I think that mostly we believe that if God really were there, things would be better, much better. So maybe he's not there. But actually, I'm going to be very straight up with you tonight as a Christian. Okay, and I'm going to tell you that God is actually very much present in this world. And it doesn't take that much, okay, to realize that this world came from God. Okay, it doesn't just pop up out of nowhere. It didn't come out of nothing. Okay, the fact that there is creation, there definitely must be a creator, right? Things don't just appear out of nowhere. I mean, that doesn't even make sense, right? How can something just come out of nothing? Just like how, you know, if you said that the food that you were eating just now, okay, it just magically appeared out of nowhere, that's not going to be very logical or very nice to the kitchen team upstairs that have been preparing your food for the past few days. Okay? The world isn't random. It works. It holds together. It doesn't crumble into non-existence. We wake up each day. Things are still there, right? Our bodies are still there. They still function. Life continues. I mean, how is it that our hearts still beat? How is it that our lungs breathe in and out air the way that it's supposed to be? How is it that this planet hasn't rotated out of its axis yet, okay, and thrown us to Pluto or wherever that we are going to go? You know, deep down, we all know that this, all of this, didn't just come out of nothing. There has to be a God that created this world and is sustaining it until now. So, the reason why bad things happen in our life and why we always feel so lost in life cannot be because God isn't there. He is there, and we know it. In fact, I'm going to be showing you something from the book of Numbers that shows you something that is opposite of what you might have experienced in your life, which is that God actually does want the best for his people. Just look at what God says, okay? He says this, "You shall say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord makes his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace." Notice how God wants to bless his people. I repeat, God wants to bless his people. He wants to keep them. He wants to show his favor upon them. He wants to be on his people's side. You know that line there? The Lord makes his face to shine upon you. And that line, the Lord lift up his countenance upon you. God is using the analogy of facial expressions, okay, to communicate the way that he feels about his people. And those of us who were born in Chinese families, you all know lah, huh? The scariest place to be when you're at home is when you break the news about getting a C for your math exam, okay? And then your mother's face is against you. Oh, scary, eh? Nightmares until today, okay? But if your mother's face shines upon you because you got an A+, whoo, yes, okay, relief, relief. Things are fine, okay? There is peace in the world. We have found favor in the eyes of our mother, okay? God's face shining upon his people means that God wants to bless them. So here's the big question at this point. If this is what God intends for his people, then why is it that life doesn't look like this? Why is it that our life still sucks? Why is it that God still feels like he's so far away for some of us? Well, if God is present, and if he does want to bless his people, and yet life around us is still so bad, then maybe the problem is us. If God wants to hashtag bless his people, okay, and yet some of us here are living very hashtag unblessed lives, then maybe that is because you are not actually part of God's people. Now, at this point, some of you might be thinking, oh, so all I need to do to be blessed is to just join this God's people lah. Okay, where's the sign-up sheet? Let's go, let's do it, right? I want to be part of God's people also, I want to sign up. Well, being part of God's people is more than some Netflix subscription that you can just subscribe and cancel whenever you want, okay? Or that Anytime Fitness membership that you can choose to renew if you want to, even though you've never used it before, ever, okay? It's not something that you can just casually join. In fact, back then, being part of God's people requires you to be an Israelite, okay, which historically refers to God's chosen, special people who belong to him. Right? He chose them to be his special people. So the only way for you, okay, to be part of God's people is if you invented a time machine, you travel back in time, you convince your great-great-great-great-grandparents, okay, your grandfather, in fact, to migrate to Israel, marry an Israelite so that you'll be born an Israelite and have an Israelite name, okay, Lucas Ben Yashim or something like that. Then you can be God's people, okay, which is obviously impossible. But even if you did, okay, let's say you did somehow invent a time machine, being part of God's people also isn't ultimately just about race. Because if that's the case, then it's kind of hypocritical, right? Me as a Chinese person talking about being part of God's people, right? I mean, I'm clearly not Middle Eastern, right? Last I checked. Because the people of Israel has always been pointing to the true Israel, which are everyone who belong to God because of what Jesus has done for us. And I'll be telling you about this Jesus later on as well. Being part of God's people is not about the color of your skin, but it is about belonging to God, living for him, worshipping him, him alone, to give him our entire life, and to deny our own selfish desires, right? To be consumed with zeal for him, to live fully for him, him alone. That is what it means to be God's people who are blessed by him. And the moment I say that, some of us, I know, are already thinking, never mind. Okay, maybe being part of God's people is not for me. Maybe too much commitment. You see, that's exactly the problem. We know there is a God. It is so obvious that he is there. We know that he created us, and yet we don't want him. We want the good things that God can give us, but we don't want God. And that's because if we are being truthful, honest with ourselves, okay, what we really want is ourselves. And that's what the Bible calls sin. Okay? We are really just out for ourselves. Right? We think we are good people until you get stressed out and you end up doing and thinking unimaginable things. We think we are patient until people get in your way and you do horrible things against them. And we show at the end of the day that all of us are just out for ourselves. Right? So is it really such a surprise then when everyone in this world does what is best for themselves, in rejection of God, and they leave behind a wake of destruction. And yet we still ask, where are you, God? So the problem with this world, my friends, is not actually that God isn't there. He is there. The problem is us. We are the problem. We are the ones that are living for ourselves, when God has always intended for us to be created for him and his purposes. And because of that, we actually show that we are not part of his people, okay? And we lose out on that blessing that we saw just now, that only God's people can have. And that is why you are never satisfied with your life. That is why the world is the way that it is. Just like what you saw in the performance earlier, right? The Scoutmaster himself says it. Wow, I love his line, man. When you think that life is always about living on your own terms, you will eventually see that it is simply not possible. Look, if we're being honest, we are like the scouts, okay, who ignore the scout master's advice because we think we know better, right? In the end, you know, Eugene, he still brings his Orang Asli book. Solo still brings his Toto, okay? Iban still didn't want to wear his shoes to the jungle. He was putting his shoes on his side. Don't even want to wear it, man. Because they assume that their way is the best way. That's us. And just like the scouts who were blindly trying to have fun their own way, and they end up in some, you know, survival crisis, that's also us. When we try to live our own lives our own way, we end up living lives where we are never satisfied, where there will always be conflict and a lack of assurance on what our purpose in this world actually is. It is only when you are truly on God's side and living for the one who created this world that you will live blessed lives. So now, let me show you all the blessings that you would be missing out on because you are not part of his people, starting from the first chapter of the book of Numbers, which, by the way, we've been going through as a church for the past 4 months. Okay, if you want to know more, I'm sure your friends will help you out by explaining to you over desserts later. And from the get-go, we see something amazing, which is that the Lord spoke to Moses. This God speaks. Okay? Guys, do you get how amazing it is that the God who created this world would speak to his people? And this God is very articulate about what he wants to say, you know. He speaks a lot, in fact. But not in an annoying, long-winded, you know, yapping kind of way. He speaks purposefully. He tells his people who they are. He tells them how to live. He tells them where to go, when to go. In fact, he tells them who he is, what he desires, what his purposes are. If you are part of God's people, you will never need to feel this existential wrestling about your identity, you know, or where your life is headed, or what your life is about. And it's all because there is a God who speaks to you. Imagine if you never needed to guess where your life is headed, because the God who created this world has already told you. Imagine if you never needed to wonder, who am I? What is my identity? Where do I belong to? What is life all about? Because God himself tells you. That is the blessing of being God's people. But that is not the blessing that you can have if you are not part of his people. And that is the reason why some of you might be lost in life. Because you are trying to guide your own life, thinking that you know what is best for you. And when you try to define life your own way, you are going to reach a dead end really, really quickly. In fact, have a look at what God tells Moses to do, who is, by the way, Moses is the leader of the Israelites who belong to God. This is what he told Moses to do. Take a census of all the congregation of the people of Israel by clans, by fathers' houses, according to the number of names, every male, head by head. From 20-year-old and upward, all in Israel who are able to go to war, you and Aaron shall list them company by company. So you see, when it comes to God's people, he counts every single name, head by head. Every single person is counted, because these are not just pieces of flesh to God, you know. All of them individually matter to God. Now, some of us might be feeling this way, like we are just a piece of flesh, right? Working non-stop, being numb, living day by day. We wake up at 7 a.m., you rush to the LRT station, you cram yourself in a maxed-out train, stuck in between four different armpits in the LRT, okay? You reach office, you get scolded by boss for not finishing that project that he only gave at 12 a.m. on the day itself. You try to work on it, but boss gives you another pile of work which needs to be done before 3 p.m., and it's already 2:30 p.m., You keep on working until 9 p.m, then you go home, you sleep, you wake up, you pangsai, and then you do it all again. It's like there's no meaning to our existence. We're just another body. Not for God's people, though. God's people are counted head by head. All of them matter to God because they are part of God's army, is it? Now, why are they going to war? Well, you can ask your friends about that later. But my main point here is that this God is the Lord of an army that he created for himself. And all of God's people, therefore, have a purpose. And that's actually not very different from every other human being, including you. Because you too were created for God's purpose. Do you know that? Here in Numbers 1 are a bunch of human beings that are marching for God's purposes. Now, you might be marching for your own purposes, which are against God's purposes, but that still doesn't change the fact that God did create you to live for Him. And you not living God's way doesn't mean that God is weak or that He's not there. If anything, it just shows that we are not robots. We do have a choice whether to live for Him or not. And we have used that freedom to go against Him all the time. And so is it really such a surprising thing that the blessing of being God's people is not for some of us here? It's because of our sin. And that explains why life is the way that it is. Now let me show you what God's blessing also means for His people. Numbers 2, sentence 1. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "The people of Israel shall camp each by his own standard, with the banners of their fathers' houses. They shall camp facing the tent of meeting on every side." Okay, the people of Israel, they stayed in tents, okay, when they were in the wilderness. I guess you can say that their life was quite intense. Haha. Okay, sorry. Had to do it. And in sentence two, they were ordered by God to pitch their tents to face this tent of meeting. Okay, this tent of meeting is a place where God's presence dwells among them at the center. So not only are they God's special people, but God's presence is literally among them. God is with them. Now, I bet you, if you had this, you will never have an existential crisis ever again in your life. Okay? Whether it is quarter life crisis lah, midlife crisis lah, you will never have an existential crisis in your life. You will never need to ask, where do I belong? Who am I? You won't need to fear the things that happen in this world. Because you literally have God. You understand? What is there to fear? What is there to be anxious about? I mean, just imagine waking up in the morning, okay, stepping out of your tent, holding your cup of coffee, and the first thing you see is the presence of God. You see, God's people, they don't need to go on a holiday every single month, you know, to try to find themselves. They don't need to go to India for some namaste trip, eat, pray, love, okay? They don't need to go climb a mountain to find the meaning of life. You know why? Because God's people have God. They have God with them. Now you might be wondering, okay, but how do Christians today have the presence of God, right? I don't see a tent anywhere. Do you guys see a tent? I don't see a tent, right? Well, a short answer is that we actually have something even better. We have Jesus, the Son of God, dwelling in us. In such a way where not only is God dwelling with us, but God is actively changing us from within so that our lives start to reflect the life of His Son. And notice how in sentence 27, this is something that is made available to even the Gentiles, aka non-Israelites, right? People like me, people like you, Chinese people, Huaren, okay? Indian people, any race is now able to be a part of His people. Okay, and on that, by the way, I would really encourage you to come back 2 weeks from now because we are going to be learning something similar in the book of Philippians. Okay, but of course, come back for next week as well. More than welcome. But my main point, though, is that this is a blessing that you should want. Because if God is with you, then you already have the answer for many of the existential questions that you have in your life. The question is, do you want God's presence? Or do you prefer your own desires, your own pleasures, which will never give you meaning and satisfaction? Now let me move on and show you another point in this chapter, which is how God's people arranged their tents back then. Okay? Now, don't be too intimidated by the number of sentences and the many foreign names here. Okay? These names, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and all the rest, all of them are representing one of the 12 tribes of the people of Israel. And my main point here is that each of God's people are given a designated place within His camp. Okay? Issachar, you are at the east. Okay? Ephraim, tribe of Ephraim, you are in the west. Asher, you go to the north. Simeon, you go to the south. You see, everyone is exactly where they are supposed to be as God intended them to be. God allocate ngam ngam where they should be at. Okay? Nothing is random. God's people always know where they are meant to be because God places them exactly where they are supposed to be. Exactly where they are. Now, the rest of the world, in some sense, is no different. Because in the same way, the place that you reside in, okay, was also determined by God. And on that, let me take you on a quick detour to the New Testament in Acts chapter 17, sentence 26. It says this about God. He made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward Him and find Him. Yet, He is actually not far from each one of us. So you see, even your own dwelling place right now is not by chance. God actually determined it for you beforehand. Now, I know some of you might think, no, that's not true. It was my choice to buy a house at 289 Jalan Datuk Sulaiman Taman Tun Dr. Ismail postcode 6000. That was my choice to stay there. Right? But guess what? All the events that led up to you staying where you are staying, okay, whether you came here for work or for studies, or your parents moved to KL, and your great grandparents migrating from Fujian, China to Malaysia in the 19th century, and your great-great-great-great-grandparents migrating on foot from the Eastern Hemisphere to the Central Eastern Hemisphere, none of that was random. It was God who determined it. It was the hand of God that made all of those chips fall into place so that it would lead up to you sitting here right now, listening about God. And hopefully by His grace, you will turn to Him this evening. That's why it says in sentence 26, by the way, that the reason why God has determined allotted periods and the boundaries of our dwelling place is so that we would seek God and acknowledge Him as your ruler. To acknowledge that God is the one who has determined life to be the way that it is. He is in control, not me. God has always been the one who is in control. You see, everything so far that we've been seeing has been shouting at our face that there is a God. And life is only found in this God. But we keep on groping around on the darkness, right? We keep on asking, where is God? Where is God? But dude, He is actually not far from each one of us. He is there. You just don't see Him because you don't want to see Him. So you should really choose to submit to Him this evening. Stop living for yourself. Again, let me show you what God's blessing looks like now from Numbers 4. Okay, the context here in this chapter is that there is a procedure for how to transport the items in the tent of meeting. We talk about it just now. And within all those details, there's something pretty interesting, you know. In sentence 7, over the table of the bread of the presence, they shall spread a cloth of blue and put on it the plates, the dishes for incense, the bowls and the flagons for the drink offering. The regular showbread also shall be on it. So when transporting this table, the Israelites, they were meant to wrap it with cloth. But not just any kind of cloth. Blue cloth. And blue cloth is really expensive back then. Okay, only kings and royalty could afford it. And the point being, God is the ultimate king over this world. But instead of dismantling it, okay, and then removing all the different parts, the bread and the dishes and the bowl on it, and then wrapping all of them up separately, like what you do when you buy something from IKEA, okay, all of it is wrapped together. Okay? Which kind of shows us, you know, that this table and its setup is quite special. This table has a lot of meaning. This table of the bread of the presence, okay, with bread on it, is placed right at the middle of the tent of meeting, at God's quote-unquote living room. Okay, which is pretty interesting, don't you think? Because why would God need a dining table? Why would God need bread? Well, the answer is, He doesn't. Because He is God. And if He is God, He doesn't need to eat. You don't need to feed God food to eat, you understand? Because He is not a created being. He created everything in this world. He is not like a wooden idol that needs you to change bread every single day so that He can have food to eat. Look, if God needs food, then that is not God, okay? So if God doesn't need bread, then it is obvious who this bread is for, right? It's for His people. God puts bread in the middle of his living room so that his people can share a meal with him forever. And us Chinese people, we know lah, huh? Sharing a meal, you know, 假饭, it's not just about eating. The peng is not just about the peng. Okay, the rice is not just about the rice. It's about fellowship, relationship. And that's what this table is symbolizing. If you are God's people, you are in fellowship with him forever. There will always be, figuratively, a seat on the dining table for you to eat with him, if you are part of God's people. Because he remembers you. He remembers you. This is like one of those movie scenes, okay, where a son tragically passes away, and his mother leaves his room just the way it is for 20 years. 20 years, she doesn't touch it. She leaves it exactly how it is 20 years ago. Why? Well, it's because even though her son is no longer there, he is still there in her mind. So the question that we should be asking is not whether God is present. He is. The question is, are you present in his mind? Because the greatest thing in life is to be known by God. It's not to be known by some celebrity, you know. Not to be known by that girl that you really like in your office. It's not to be known by your boss or your managing director, whoever. None of that can satisfy your soul. None of that can make an ounce of a difference to your life in the bigger picture. But the greatest thing in life is to be known by this God. If you want the Lord to lift his countenance upon you, to make his face shine upon you, then you must be known by him. But how could you be known by him if you keep living against him? If you keep asking where is he, whether he exists, when it is clear as day that he is there. In fact, for God's people, God isn't just there with us. He even leads us. He guides us step by step along the way. Just look at how the Israelites were living their life in Numbers 9, which was the passage that was read out to you earlier. Okay, just look at how life works for them. Okay, for the Israelites, there was this cloud that towered above them. And that was God's way of guiding his people. Whenever the cloud lifted, they set out. Where the cloud settled, they camp. God tell them go left, they go left. God tell them go right, they go right. God leads them all the time. Unlike the scouts earlier, okay, in the performance, you don't have to live a directionless life if you are God's people, where you assume that you know where you're going, but you actually don't. Because if you are part of God's people, you have the leader who actually knows the ways of this world. You know why? Because he created the world, bro. And even though we don't see a pillar of cloud today that leads us as God's people, guess what? We have something even better. We have his word. God still speaks to us, guides us through the scriptures. And because of the Bible, God's people don't need to guess what life is about. We don't need to guess where our life is headed. We don't need to be sitting on an LRT or some lecture theatre somewhere, wondering what life is really about, whether God is even there for us or not. We know what life is because God literally tells it to us. His word is our guidance. In fact, it's even said here in Numbers chapter 10 that whether in times of war, whether in times of gladness, God remembers his people. Okay? Whether good times, whether bad times, that doesn't change the reality. God is with his people. So if you are part of God's people, okay, and if you are facing some bad times, okay, let's say your boss fires you for no reason, or you get dumped by your girlfriend, okay, or you go bankrupt because of inflation, or your house explodes because your useless husband left the gas on, okay? Even if you didn't get the promotion that you wanted, guess what? It is not the end of the world. Why? Because you know that you already have the greatest treasure, which is God, which is that God knows you and he is with you and you belong to him and nothing will ever change that if you are part of God's people. No, you should ask your friends later, by the way, the friends who invited you, hey bro, do you really know what life is about? Like the stuff that Lucas guy said just now, is he being for real? You know, like, do you really never feel lost or unsure of what you're living for? Is that true? And they will probably say, no lah, sometimes I lose sight of it lah, huh? Sometimes, okay, when I'm stressed out, when I'm emotional. But you know what? Because God changed my heart, because I have his word, he always brings me back and reminds me about what my life really is about. Even if life sometimes sucks, I know that I have God. and that is enough. What more can I ask for? That is the kind of assurance that you can have in your life if you are part of God's blessed people. You see, God's people have direction because God defines our direction. And to live according to God's direction, which is to live for God's purposes and not against it, is to have true life. Guys, there is so much blessing and so much guidance in being God's people, right? So given everything that we've said tonight, we should all want to be God's people. We should try our best to be different right now. Try our best so that God would somehow accept us. But here is the problem. As much as we can try to change ourselves, it's not going to work. Because our problem is not a mindset problem. Our problem is not a mentality problem that can just be changed with some psychological trick or some mentality shift. Our problem is our hearts. Our hearts don't want to be with God. And so the only way for you to change yourself so that you can be part of God's people is if you could somehow rip your rebellious heart out, okay? Somehow grow and regenerate a new heart that loves God and want to live for Him, which is obviously impossible. For there to be actual change, we need God to do it for us. Look at what Ezekiel, who was one of God's prophets, said about what God will do for His people. And I will give you a new heart and a new spirit I will put within you. And I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes and be careful to obey my rules. We need God to give us new hearts. A heart that is no longer hard, no longer resistant, no longer living for our own desires, but a heart that is alive. Because the Spirit of God is now within us. A heart that can now walk in God's statutes and obey Him, because it will come from an internal transformation, not from psyching ourselves up, not from habitual therapy, okay? But because we actually are changed from within. In other words, if you want to be a part of God's people, if you want a new heart, only God can give it to you. Only God can save you. Now, how is it that we can have God's salvation? Well, firstly, you have to admit completely that you are a sinner, that you don't deserve to be a part of God's people. And secondly, you need to put your trust in Jesus. Now, let me tell you about who this Jesus is. In some sense, everything that we've been talking about tonight from the book of Numbers has been pointing to Jesus. And I'm going to let your friends talk about that with you later, how that even works. But one clear way that we see this is the existence of priests. Okay? Let me read it for you. Chapter 8, sentence 19. And I have given the Levites, which are the priests of the time, as a gift to Aaron and his sons from among the people of Israel, to do the service for the people of Israel at the tent of meeting, and to make atonement for the people of Israel, that there may be no plague among the people of Israel when the people of Israel come near the sanctuary. God already knew something was seriously wrong about His people, right? They are sinful. And because of that, they can't just walk into God's presence. There's a separation. And so, God gives them priests. Priests are people who stand in between to represent sinful people before God and to deal with their problem of sin. Okay? These priests, they would offer sacrifices of bulls and goats to make atonement, okay, which means to appease the wrath of God that was meant to be on sinful people so that they would not be destroyed. And look, that's an amazing thing, okay? Because in reality, this means that God's people don't actually deserve to be a part of God's people. And yet, God gives them a way to remain as God's people. God is gracious. But that is not something that you can say about yourself if you still refuse to be part of God's people. That grace is not granted to you. But here is the problem, okay? Which is that this system of priesthood, it never really fixed God's people. Right? The priests, they kept on offering sacrifices again and again, bull after bull after bull after goat after bull after goat after bull. Because sin was never able to be fully dealt with. Okay? It was covered, sure, but it was never removed. Just like how you cannot pretend your sin is not there. Just like how you cannot put on a facade that you are a good person when actually you are rotten in the inside. All of us are. Okay? But the priesthood was pointing forward to someone greater, to Jesus. Let me show you what the book of Hebrews says about this Jesus. Every priest stands daily at his service, offering repeatedly the same sacrifices, which can never take away sins. But when Christ had offered for all time a single sacrifice for sins, he sat down on the right hand of God, waiting from that time until his enemy should be made a footstool for his feet. For by a single offering, he has perfected for all time those who are being sanctified. Jesus is not just another priest. He is the better one, the final one, who deals with the problem of our sin once and for all. Unlike the priests in Numbers, he doesn't offer animals. He offers himself on the cross. And because he is the only one who actually lived the life that God's people were meant to live, when he dies, he doesn't just cover up sin, he deals with it completely. Right? Jesus' own blood on the cross cleanses the hearts of his people. It removes this barrier between us and God, and so we can finally be the people that God deserves. People who live for him perfectly, fully. So guys, the only way that you are going to be saved this evening is if you admit completely that you are a sinner who has failed before God, trust in what Jesus has done, and submit to him. Admit that you are a sinner who wants to live your life for your own pleasure. Because that's all of us, including me, including your friends, all of us. Right? You can ask them later, all the horrible things they have done, they'll tell you. Right? I'm by no means saying that we are better than anyone here. Right? We are all sinners. And despite that, we are thankful that God has made us his own. Now, one final passage today. As all of these things, right, was happening amongst the people of Israel, there was one man that was watching all of it. Okay? His name was Hobab. And he was a Midianite, which means that he was not a member of the people of Israel. And here is what Moses said to him in sentence 29. It says, "We are setting out for the place of which the Lord said, 'I will give it to you. Come with us, and we will do good to you.' For the Lord had promised good to Israel." You see, Hobab has been watching all of this happen, just like you. He has been seeing the goodness of being blessed by God. And he knows that there is no life outside of a life with God. And so at that point, Hobab had a choice, okay? To stay where he was, or to go with God, to be a part of God's people. Now look at what he said. Sentence 30. "But he said to him, 'I will not go. I will depart to my own land and to my kindred.'" Bruh. After all that, are you serious? After seeing the blessing of God upon his people that could be his, he just decides to say, "Hey, no lah. I think I'm just gonna chow lah, okay? Go back to my own life, just chill. Back to what is familiar. Back to what he knows. Back to what feels safe. Even though he has seen something better." Dude, come on, man. And look, that might be some of us here right now. Right? You are seeing something better. Not just better, but true life. And you still want what you want. But for the rest of you, I hope that this evening, God has worked in your heart to show you that there is actually something worth giving up your life for. In a similar sense, what Hobab has seen is the same thing that you have seen today as well. And so this invitation that Moses gives to Hobab, that is the same invitation that is presented to you also. Just like Hobab, you have a choice. You can stay where you are, hold on to your own way, your own definition of what is good, your own desire for your life, continue living a directionless life because you have no God and face judgment. Or you can come with God. You can be changed by him. You can have his guidance and his presence. So I hope that you won't stay where you are and remain far away from God. Thanks for listening.